Megan, Anna, and I are so excited to have a repeat sponsor who's supporting the Divergent Conversations podcast. Landmark College is the world's first accredited college designed exclusively for students who learn differently. Landmark, located in Putney, Vermont, which is one of my favorite states, offers courses in person and online, awarding associate and bachelor's degrees, and offering pre-college, gap year, and professional development programs for educators who work with neurodivergent students. With a student-to-faculty ratio of just 7-1, and the renowned Landmark College Institute for Research and Training, Landmark offers personalized and research-informed support for neurodivergent students that is not available at traditional colleges. Still enrolling for fall 2025. Learn more about this opportunity at landmark.edu. That's landmark.edu. Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. We are continuing our, what are we calling this series? Burnout Hell? Burnout City?
But it's got to have duality to it. So like Burnout Cities. Oh my goodness. We referenced our cities, but we didn't add to our cities metaphor in the last episode. Let's be sure and add to our city metaphor.
Yeah. Here. That's probably how you know we're not feeling well.
That is for me.
Creativity.
Yeah, accessing play and creativity, that is one of the ways I know that I am not, like when I'm struggling to access that, that's one of the ways I know I'm not in a good space.
Same. Okay, we're going to do our best to add to our metaphorical city. Today we are going to talk about masking and how that contributes to burnout and how a lot of people who do discover that they're autistic later in life hit that wall with intense autistic burnout, drop the mask, and sometimes all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of us, our lives can change in pretty dramatic ways when we drop the mask. And so it can be pretty, it's such an interesting experience because it can be both stabilizing, but it can also be destabilizing. Like it often takes a season of destabilization to get to the stability that comes on the other side of that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm about 4 years in post-discovery now, so I would still say that there are a lot of places where I really have a hard time. But I think that it's just really me being my most authentic self and acknowledging all of the accommodations that I build in on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just spilled water all over myself. Thankfully, just water.
That reminds me of Airplane. Did you ever watch the Airplane movies as a kid?
You know, I think that was like a little bit before my time.
Oh my gosh. I'm only like 2 years older than you. Oh, but like, I think my family watched like older movies. Hmm. I don't know. So I remember this was like the first joke that I remember like my family got, but I didn't. So it's the kind of like stupid humor. But anyways, in it, he like is drinking a glass of water and he misses his mouth and he's like, I have a drinking problem. And everyone laughs. And I was like, why is that funny? And then, you know, I guess it makes sense as a kid. I wouldn't have understood the context of that joke. But they had to explain it to me. I'm like, and I still didn't get it. I was like, a drinking problem if you like can't get it into your mouth.
Yeah, you need water for hydration. Like your body needs water.
Yeah. And if you are struggling to pour it into your mouth versus your body, that's a drinking problem.
Yes. So
anyways, masking.
Okay.
Well, actually, I think masking can make us more vulnerable toward drinking problems. The other kind. Sure.
And we have talked about that quite a bit.
We have talked about that. Yeah. So we've had a couple episodes on masking. I think we could link to those. Sure. So yeah, masking, it's not good, it's not bad. It's a thing. There's privileges that come with it. And there's also very real risks that come with it, and burnout being one of them. Mental health, like I think those who mask tend to have more mental health conditions, tend to have more substance use. Suicidality goes up. Like there's some very real cost to energy or cost to masking. Masking is also a very high energy activity, like cognitively in our bodies. So the masking to burnout connection just makes sense to me. So yes, masking is a high energy activity.
I have an idea. Okay. Well said, first of all. Second of all, for this metaphorical city, if we're going to incorporate masking, and you say that it's like masking is just kind of leads to burnout, that just kind of makes sense to me. What if there was like a bridge in the city and that, you know, you're masking all your life, you're going over this bridge, and immediately on the other side of that bridge is just complete and utter burnout and depletion?
Yeah. So it's like a drop off.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like a drawbridge. So you're like masking and you're walking, and all of a sudden the bridge starts opening up and lifting
and then,
up.
And then you fall into the river.
Yeah.
And it's cold and it's dark. And it's like, it's this really cold shock to your system.
Mm-hmm. And maybe there's like a jellyfish in the water, and maybe it smells really bad down there. And like, yeah.
Uh-huh. And you're like, what is going on? And then you're trying to figure out how to swim.
Right.
But it's really cold, so you're struggling to remember how to swim.
Yep.
And you're really disoriented because you have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you look back up at the bridge and what your life used to be. And you're like, well, life used to work, but now
yeah.
I can't get my arms to work because I'm cold and I've just been stung by a jellyfish and I don't know what's happening.
And you're thinking about how, like, when you were masking, you would just sidestep that portion of the bridge and you would continue on your day. And you didn't even see the fact that the entire thing opened up and dropped off into this disgusting, smelly, cold water.
Welcome to autism, people. Congratulations. You're autistic.
Yeah, that's gonna, yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, if we're talking like, especially for a lot of people who discover that they're autistic later in life, we see a lot of high masking people who all of a sudden those strategies that you've used for survival no longer meet your mm-hmm. needs, or they're no longer working.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't work. And then there's the confusion, both for you, but also for the people in your life of like, well, last month you could do this, or you used right. to be able to do this.
Yeah.
And that gets back to what we were talking about last week with energy management of like, well, I used to be able to push through. So mm-hmm. I should be able to push through. Like I right. should be able to figure out how to climb up out of this lake, back onto the bridge, get into my dry clothes and just carry on.
Yeah, exactly that. And how much of a mindfuck that can be in those moments where you are truly just like grasping at straws because you're trying to figure out like, what is happening to me? Like, why has life suddenly shifted so drastically? And I'm actually thinking about what you're saying about how masking leads to other co-occurring like mental health conditions, substance use, etc. And I wonder, and I haven't seen a lot of research for this, but like for those who have relied heavily on alcohol, who have unfortunately moved more into that alcohol addiction space, who have gone through perhaps like detox and rehabilitation afterwards and recovery and have abstained, I just wonder what that does in terms of like that drastic shock to the system of all of that masking that's gone on, because alcohol and substance use have become so much of a crutch is not a affirming term in this
mm-hmm. like an unhelpful accommodation.
Yeah. And how that yeah. all of a sudden is gone because you're trying to recover from substance use or alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, why is all of this stuff happening to me? And mm-hmm. that gets really messy, because when you are coming out of substance use recovery and you're trying to untangle your life, you are going to experience like a new existence with a lot of new sensation and overwhelm mm-hmm. and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to untangle that stuff simultaneously, whew, messy,
mm-hmm.
hard to delineate and different.
That's really interesting. And it's also, it'd be interesting, like of what comes first. So, mm-hmm. cause like, I know several people who like went through recovery and then it was years later, they discovered they were autistic or ADHD
right.
and that helped them make more sense of it. But you're right. There'd be an awakening to like the sensory experience when you're not dulling it. And that's also for, I hear this come up a lot. And this was my experience of after discovering I was autistic and kind of thawing my relationship to my body, which had been a pretty frozen, dissociated one. I got more in touch with my sensory sensitivities. So like there would be these different seasons in life where I think so like recovery, sobriety would be one where it's like, oh, there's a lot happening both and also emotionally. That tends because substance use is often a way that we're avoiding emotions. So there'd be a lot we're waking up to both emotionally, but also sensory, socially. Yeah. And then there's a similar process when we discover we're autistic or ADHD.
Yeah. So it, you know, all of the energy, both consciously and subconsciously going into masking every day of your life and not having the understanding as to why, aside from potentially like, I know this helps me fit in. I know this helps me, you know, feel less awkward.
Yeah. And even that though, I think a lot of us don't have access to, cause like, I don't know about you, but I assumed everyone was coaching their body on what to do or prescripting conversations or stopping their bodies from moving or forcing eye contact. Like, I just thought that's what everyone was doing.
Yep. Okay. So back to this metaphorical city, everyone is doing that in all scenarios. But when you come to the other side of that bridge and you do sidestep and you get there on the other side and you drop the mask, maybe it's a situation where like, nobody's doing that. Nobody's forcing eye contact. Nobody's like.
So are now, you know, now are we in Monotropic Manor City?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so, yeah. Oh, so like the bridge connects the cities, but you have to do the like ice plunge, river plunge to get to the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, and maybe this is part of it. Maybe some people are desperately trying to climb. Maybe there's like a rope ladder and they're trying to climb back up to get to the old city. Cause it's like, that's where their people are. That's where maybe their jobs are. So it's like, I think I'm supposed to do that.
Right.
Or you can go to this other, you can go to Monotropic City by just like swimming over to the edge and like dragging your body up to the curb. And then when you like stumble into the center city, you realize, yeah, no one's forcing eye contact. No one's doing small talk. People are stimming and like regulating their bodies how they need to.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
But then there's no, okay, but people have to go back and forth between these cities.
Yeah, they do. And I think maybe perhaps that bridge becomes a little less treacherous to navigate back and forth. Like it's easier to make sense of, okay, I need to go back into this part of my life. I understand that I'm going to mask these situations, or I'm more aware of the fact that I'm masking these situations and perhaps even have the understanding as to why.
So each time you go back, it gets a little bit harder and it takes more spoons. Each time you go back, you have to like to do the drawbridge to put it down. The first time you have to put one spoon in and the drawbridge goes down and you can go back to masking Burnout City. And then the second time you have to put two spoons in. So every time you go back, you have to actually put in more spoons. Because every time you're more aware of the energy that you're using to mask and it becomes a little bit more painful and takes a little bit more energy and feels a little bit more inauthentic and a little bit more dissatisfying to like connect in that way. So each time you go back, it's a little bit more depleting.
And it really does make you have to confront and face, is this worth it? Is going back continuously worth it on my system? Or is it necessary and I have to do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, most people work in that city. So most people, and then, we've talked a lot in other episodes about masking and safety, especially for racialized autistic people. So for most people, it's not a choice. It's like, this is what keeps me safe or this is how I get my income. So it's maybe you get little pockets of being in the other city where you're unmasked. And that's so good because that gives us a moment of reprieve, but really people's lives are still in the other city where they're needing to mask.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what we hear, right? Is like these momentary blips of even being able to unmask safely are so important. And having that intentional time to unmask safely and to do so in a way that works best for your system, with the acknowledgement that I don't get to do this long term mm-hmm. each day or throughout most of my life.
Or also, right, so there's a third experience where you're unmasked, but you're in the city, you're in the burnout city where people are masking. And so, and that's still, so then people are looking at you. So yeah. That's still an energy cost, right? Yeah. If you can't mask, if you're like, if you're an autistic person who can't mask, or if you're unmasked, but you're in kind of neuronormative space, you're being perceived in that unmasking that is, for many of us, that involves unwanted attention. And that also takes energy. Like, and that's where it's not like masking takes energy and unmasking doesn't. It's like, right. Well, if you're unmasking and it's safe to do so, you're either on your own or you're with other people who are unmasking. There's this third experience where you're unmasking, but you're having people's negative responses to it.
Yeah. Yep. And that's also a really painful, vulnerable place to be.
And also that's one of the things that's not an option for everyone, like for a lot of autistic people who can't mask. It's, yeah.
Yeah. That constant, perception and mm-hmm. yeah. Unwanted attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that takes energy too, to absorb that. Yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm just glad you started this conversation with like, it's not good. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like it just is. And it's a part of this experience. So a lot of people ask this question of, okay, I finally discover later in life that I'm autistic. How come life feels so much fucking harder right now?
Yep. I hear that question a lot too.
Yeah.
I think because we're like, well, I think for me, it was because I started paying attention. I started paying attention to what my experience actually was. Like I said, I got more connected to my body. So I realized how sensory overloaded it is. There was something, I do think there was also something psychologically about, you mean this 150 pound backpack that I've been carrying, not everyone else is carrying that. So there's also just something psychologically about realizing I was doing extra labor that others weren't that made me, I think, feel a bit deflated.
Yeah.
And yeah. How about for you? What do you think was it about discovering autism or ADHD that then made life actually feel harder?
One, I want to say I like your example a lot, but I thought what you were going to say is that you've been carrying this 150-year-old body around, because I often joke that I feel like I'm 150 years old.
Well, I do. I feel like that. I don't go that far. I say I'm an 80-year-old woman, but like yeah. My body feels very old.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I thought you were going with that. But the backpack makes a lot more sense. How about for me? I think it was, yeah, I think that was a part of it, paying more attention, being significantly more aware of like how much energy and effort lots of things take me. I think there was a lot of unpacking internalized ableism, kind of redefining and reforming friendships and relationships takes an enormous amount of energy, and there's a lot of vulnerability in it, and just setting boundaries around certain mm-hmm. things and trying hard to stick to them. I think I've trying to think of a way that of wording this. I feel like I've become so much more reclusive and overwhelmed in a lot of ways. Like I don't mm-hmm. leave my house very often anymore.
Oh no, I've rubbed off on you.
Like, you know, I do travel for like events and things for work related things in my life, but otherwise I'm really not mm-hmm. leaving very often. And I think I just have become like so hyper aware of how impacted I am by so many things.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the summertime. I'm in North Carolina. We're in a heat wave. Like, it's hell. And like, the sheer thought of going outside and like being active or walking around or going to meet a friend for coffee, none of that sounds appealing to me. And it's really because of how much I struggle to regulate temperature, especially heat sensitivity. And I just have to exist in like darkness. And I think I've realized that more.
So here's a question. Would past self Patrick have gone in the heat to go meet a friend for coffee? You would have been uncomfortable, but maybe not noticed it terribly much. And then like, would you have come home and crashed, but not made the connection? Like, what would the cost have been to past Patrick?
Yep. Past Patrick. The ghosts of Patrick's past would have went for sure. And like almost quote unquote white knuckled through. And mm-hmm. had been very aware of how like uncomfortable I was in the space and how much I wanted to leave and how I would try to figure out ways like that I could end that engagement early so I could get out of there. And including like making up excuses, like completely being like, yeah, this happened, I have to go. Because I was such a fucking people pleaser in those times. And then coming home, I would have noticed, I don't even know if I would have noticed how exhausted I was, but I would have been really irritable and really frustrated and really overwhelmed. But I don't think I would have had a connection as to why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have just been like, that would have just been my existence. And
Yeah. No, that makes sense to me. That I think similar, like, I remember... So when I was doing grad school and then I'd go pick up the kids from school and they had an after school program. And I remember like getting out of the car to go to the place to pick them up. There'd be like this huge wall of fatigue. And it like, I felt like I was dragging my body. And then I'd get the kids in the car and then I'd get home. And I would often, especially if Luke used to have a lot of work meetings, if he didn't, then like I would just collapse on the couch. And I thought it was like the language I was using was chronic fatigue. And I still don't know all the health pieces that I'm dealing with, but it would just, and my family would just kind of know that, like, I'm just collapsed on the couch till the next day.
Right.
And yeah, I wouldn't have made the connections to, oh, well, that's because I'm sensory overwhelmed from my day of being out in the world and from my uncomfortable professional clothes I'm wearing. Yeah. I just knew that it was physically painful. Like those transitions were physically painful. And then I would just crash on the couch till I could go to bed.
We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you're always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
I can actually remember, now that you say that, it like brings up a memory for me when I used to live in New York. I was dating someone up there and she had a big family. We'd go to a lot of just not even holidays, just like Sunday dinners or whatevers. And how often I would fall asleep laying down on their couch in their living room and how I didn't realize that was not like quote unquote socially acceptable to just like a 6'2" human being like laid on the couch asleep.
And it was so funny
how they would bring it up to me. Like, it's kind of rude that like you come over and fall asleep on the couch when we're trying to all spend time together. And never realized how depleting those environments were.
That is so funny, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, funny to look back on, but like in the moment, it was hard because like I didn't know why this was happening to me. You know, I'm like 20 years old, 22 years old. I'm like, how do I have zero energy? Like, how come when I go to these environments and these spaces, like I really start to immediately shut down, and I just didn't have any sense of the understanding whatsoever.
Yeah. Understanding of like why you are shutting down, or apparently the social understanding that maybe it's not polite to sleep on a couch when right. you're at your girlfriend's
yep.
house.
Yep. 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 But and not totally, even in like,
yeah. Go ahead.
Not even a reclining couch. Like a recliner, I feel like would have been more acceptable.
Yeah. More you like, were like taking like, up the couch. Yeah. You were taking up like three up or four people's.
Yeah. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. And I totally see how that gets coded too. That's like the aloof, rude boyfriend versus exactly. like, oh yeah, that's my autistic right. boyfriend.
Yeah. And I, you know, certainly was not trying to be rude in any way. I mean, I didn't really like her family, but I wasn't going to like go there and present that way, but like couldn't help it. And I also remember being in jobs at that time where I had a lot of independence as like a case manager who had to go from location to location and check on clients. And I would fall asleep in my car, in not like driving, but like I would literally like go find parking lots and go to sleep. And just remember how tired I was all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am still that tired, but I just never sleep now. So that's really fun.
I was going to say, you used to be able to sleep a lot better than you yeah. do now, it sounds like.
Or just like crash too from like fatigue. But,
well, maybe you know, you need to go have more sensory irritating experiences and then maybe you'll sleep better.
Yeah.
So the
yeah.
day I got back from the coast with Luke's, so we were with Luke's family and there were lots of kids. So it was a sensory overwhelming week. The day I got back, I slept 10 and a half hours. I never sleep like that.
Right.
So here's my recommendation. Go to like a Chuck E. Cheese, just oh like go into like the ball pit, mm-hmm. just sit there with all oh. the kids playing around you. Do yep. that for like, you know, 4 hours and then go home and sleep. That's my new sleep strategy for you, Patrick.
What a prescription. That could also be in Burnout Hell City is like, it's just Chuck E. Cheese's and it's like adults and kids in the ball pit and it's disgusting and gross and germ ridden and loud and obnoxious. And like, have you ever touched those disgusting like the things in the ball pit? Like they're texturally, it's horrible plastic, like oh gross. Or also like as you're looking for rides in Burnout City, it's only lifts that are shared lifts and the AC doesn't work and it's super hot and it's cranked down windows that don't roll down. And you're like sharing space in a Prius with like four other adults. And the guy's playing like music really loudly. And he also smokes cigarettes in his lift. So like
smokes cigarettes, but also has an air freshener to try to hide the yeah. cigarette smoke. So you're both getting the smoke cigarette smell, but also the air freshener is really intense. And you're getting yeah, that
it's like
as well.
A pina colada air freshener that just came out of the package. And it just, oh God.
I like our cities.
I mean, I don't like this city.
I mean, yeah, I don't like it, but I like the personification of burnout that we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Have we said anything helpful for people? Should we try to say anything helpful for people?
Sorry, y'all. If you're still with us, this is our lives right now. So, you know, just trying to showcase that. Helpful stuff. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, damn, no, that feels like a lot of pressure. I mean.
Well, let me, I'll flip the baton back in the hot potato, as you call it. I just saw my dog walker like through the window, so I know what's about to happen in a second. But so you talk about this a lot, like how there are ways to unmask safely in an environment that you can control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it means a couple of minutes a day, even if it means an hour a day when you can. Acknowledging, right, as we've said before, there are not going to be environments that are going to be safe for you to, for all of you to mask in, or unmask in, I mean, I'm sorry, words, for a lot of reasons. So taking those small opportunities when you can to unmask, and you can, we can talk about unmasking strategies and sensory soothing strategies too simultaneously, but I think that's important to, even if it's 10 minutes a day.
Yeah. And that's where, like, I will differentiate between like private unmasking and public unmasking, and that I hope everyone can privately experiment with unmasking, because part of that to me, we have to unmask with ourselves, right? And this is where, like, I actually feel like the language of masking doesn't quite capture it. Like, it's deeper than that, because it's when we've been masking from a young age, like, we don't know what movement feels good. We don't necessarily know what clothing feels good. So it's experimentation. It's what movement feels good. And if we're alone and private, maybe we're experimenting with different kinds of stems or different kind of like dancing and music or different kind of textures. And we're giving ourselves permission to just experiment and be in our body and see what feels good. And that sounds simple, but it's actually pretty radical for a lot of us.
For sure. Even what you're mentioning, like in terms of clothing, right? Like you've mentioned on here before, like, okay, as a woman in this professional settings, I'm supposed to dress a certain way. Society says that. A lot of this stuff is really uncomfortable. For me, similar, like, okay, I own a private practice. I'm supposed to dress more professionally and go to work every day. I'm hot all the time. So like unmasking for me was like, I'm going to wear shorts in situations where some people are like, why is this person wearing shorts? It's about like wearing more athletic clothing that is sensory soothing to me. And like starting to experiment with like brighter colors, even, because I've mentioned on here that I used to really dull my clothing out for this reason, because I did not want to be perceived or draw attention. And I think you kind of have mentioned doing the opposite in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, you know, that stuff has been really empowering too. Just trying to find clothing that feels comfortable for me, that, you know, feels comfortable on my body, that I don't feel like, I don't know, a movement and feeling so inflexible so often that like that's also really important. And yeah, so that's been a part of it. Keeping the temperature at a certain temperature in my house has been a part of unmasking, if I'm being honest, because I get so uncomfortable so easily. And having accommodating partners who are understanding is also very important and has been really important for me.
Well, as soon as you said that, I was like, that's where kind of self-advocacy gets connected, and also us giving ourselves permission to take our needs seriously, where that taps into unmasking, because it's... Yeah, if we're in shared space and then we're negotiating things like temperature or smells,
right?
That's going to involve conversations with other people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, we both have supportive partners. We've talked about this on here, and we acknowledge that that's not the case for everybody, and that it's not always safe or comfortable to bring some of this stuff up. And I feel for y'all. I mean, that breaks my heart, you know, when I get commentary on social media of like, my boyfriend doesn't understand, my husband doesn't do this, my wife doesn't understand. It's like, I really feel for y'all. And,
I think that would be, that is such a hard situation to be in, where it's, where these basic needs are, there's not a capacity there to understand them or meet a person there. Or also the experience where people are in like autistic ADHD partnerships, where maybe there is understanding, but like your needs are really different. One person runs cold, another person runs hot. And then maybe you're doing it compassionately, but you're still navigating like clashing needs in the same environment. I think one of the things that really stood out to me when I started thinking about unmasking, because when I was thinking about masking, I was thinking about all the things I was doing, like scripting and forcing eye contact. But what really hit me one day was when I realized all of the things I was repressing, like how I had basically taught my body to repress the natural instincts that self-soothed it. So yeah. Repressing movement that soothed, repressing, you know, yeah, like eye gaze avoidance, and how that over time taught me not to trust my body, because it taught me that what your body needs isn't what the situation needs. And so overriding my body's instincts and prioritizing like the comfort of people around me. And that to me, once I was able to name that, that to me feels like such a important piece of the unmasking experience. Again, this can be a private part, a private experience of learning to retrust our body's instincts. Because yeah. For a lot of us, what masking has meant is learning to override them and not trust them. And so however that looks, and I think, again, a lot of that is through experimentation, but that to me is a really important piece of unmasking, is how do I start to rebuild my trust in my, what my body is telling me it wants and needs to regulate.
Yeah, such a good point. And it's almost like this reclaiming / rediscovering experience of at first really being confused and also having to, like you mentioned, override some of the instincts that are so deeply ingrained in us, because it's just become part of us in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of people really struggle with the unmasking process because they're like, well, we've talked about like separation from sense of self, right? But who the hell am I?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do I enjoy doing? Like we've talked, we've joked around about asking, controversial now, asking ChatGPT, like what I'll do for hobbies, you know?
Yeah. 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 It's, and it, so it can, yeah, it's not, and that's where it, like unmasking, it doesn't feel robust enough, because it's not like I'm just going to take off the mask and, oh, there I am, Megan Anna. Yeah. It's such a more complex process of, it's more untangling. And there's a metaphor that I've heard that I like, that the idea of unearthing kind of, and I like the rootedness of that, yeah, that versus unmasking.
Right.
And kind of coming back to our roots and, yeah, I like kind of more earthy grounded metaphors for this process, because it is a complex process, and it's a slow process, and it's a deep process, and it's a process of slowly nurturing and letting kind of unfurl like kind of who the person is that's been tangled up in all of this other stuff.
I like that. Yeah. I think, you know, for a lot of you who are listening, maybe have discovered later in life, there's probably going to be some messiness here and confusion.
Because relationships can change too as part of that. Like if some of our core relationships have forged through like our more performative self, that can be really hard for partners, for friends, for family members to see that shift. And so relationships might shift as part of that. I'd actually be interested. This would be because there is so much more discovery of adults happening right now. I would be curious if there was any kind of research on like divorces or like long-term relationship endings afterward.
Yeah.
Just what that experience is like, because it would make sense to me that there'd be some pretty big relational shifts for a lot of people after a discovery like this.
100%. I think that would be spot on, because, you know, masking and being more performative or showing up as your inauthentic self, then all of a sudden it's like, this is not really who I am. And you've talked so much about like the process of neuroqueering after discovery, and a lot can change. I mean, so I think that would be interesting to navigate and to learn more about. I'm also thinking about like how COVID, as horrific as the onset was, I know we're still dealing with COVID, and a lot of people working from home and working remotely, and the correlation there, obviously, with like more people discovering that they are, in fact, autistic, because all of a sudden you're in your home, potentially without workplace stressors that you have to experience on a daily basis, and you're unmasking more, even if you are unmasking subconsciously. And all of a sudden it's like, huh, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think when I think about like the drivers of the adult, the more adult identification, I think COVID's a huge one for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Or the pandemic. Yeah.
Your workplace with your fluorescent lights and coworkers and whatever else. And it's just like, oh, I just get to be in my house and exist here. This is kind of an interesting experience.
And it also became a driver for ADHD, but for sometimes for different reasons. One thing I was seeing, because I was working at the clinic the first year, like the hospital clinic in person, and we were getting a lot of ADHD referrals. And this was before I had discovered. And so a lot of adults with the collapse of work structure were struggling from working from home. And so that was leading to more ADHD diagnoses because they were really relying on the rhythms and the structure of external work. And then working from home wasn't working well. So, and that, so then, and that's got to be an interesting experience for those of us like us, however you say it, ADHD, where it's like from a sensory perspective, love working from home.
Sure.
From a executive functioning, there was something about going to an office that like task initiation was just easier than it is from home.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of probably more pros and cons.
For
sure. Which we haven't really talked about this, but like ADHD masking can also be a thing. We've kind of been focusing on autistic masking, but ADHD masking can also be a thing that is energy costly and depleting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think anytime we're not being our authentic selves and suppressing our natural instincts and experiences and our natural traits, it's like it's going to be an energy suck regardless of neurotype 2. And, you know, I think a lot of people of color, you know, have to mask in so many situations who may not be ADHD or autistic, and the energy drain that comes with code switching and masking in workplaces and just in different social settings and environments for safety's sake, having to be constantly vigilant about that too. So yeah, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I feel like we did a decent enough job of tying in positive with drain and negativity, which is the sweet spot.
I'll be so curious. Watch our like episode downloads just like drop this season when we're, because we're, I would say we're being more unmasked.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Than we've, and I think it's progressed. If you go from like when we were recording weekly to like last season to this season, I feel like we are progressively being more unmasked in how we're showing up. Whoa, wouldn't that be interesting if we're showing up unmasked and then the podcast downloads drop?
Just tanks.
Just say like, this is too depressing to listen to. Like,
yeah,
that'd be funny.
I'll pay attention to the analytics. Let us know if you like the podcast more over the last two seasons or prior to that, so we can get a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I pay attention to all the analytics because I do a lot of the sponsorship conversations, and y'all still like us for one reason or another. So we'll take it. Appreciate your support.
Well, they haven't seen it when we're both depressed yet. That's new. That's new territory.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, last year, I mean, you've publicly talked about where you were at mentally and with your like pain and your health in the winter / fall. And I definitely was not in a good place. So
I don't even remember what we talked about last winter. Yeah. We probably had guests on and we're probably doing series, which was probably a way of distancing from the fact we were struggling, was by focusing on object-based conversations. And I think we're doing a little bit less of that.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also think we weren't recording during like...
The world was different. We had a slightly different political landscape.
Yes, that. The world was different. And we can all read between the lines. Yeah, I think that plays a role too. Just the stress of life at the moment. Anyway.
And on that note.
So, you know, we are almost done with this series and this collection. We have ideas for what comes next and between breaks and just trying to figure that out. But if you do ever have suggestions, you know, we're always open to hearing them. We may not take them, but, you know, please feel free to send them in. And I think the collections are working, you know, pacing system. This is a pacing system.
Also, my team mentioned, let's please stick to seasons or series, because on the graphics, it's seasons. Mm-hmm. We've talked about series before in the past, and now we're introducing a new word, collection.
Oh, I was just pulling that from you. Always said how much you like collections. I was like,
I do like collections.
Okay.
But the other thing, so my team is helping me with this. So I have a lot of digital products where I have like two different names for the same product. I'm very ADHD in my inconsistency of naming things. So we're now going through and making all of the names consistent.
What are we calling it?
Well, I don't know. We keep saying, we keep going back and forth between like, well, are we calling them new seasons, even though they're only like 8 episodes? So we could stick with seasons because it's on the graphics.
Sure.
Or we could pivot to series, but my team tells me collections would be a new word.
Not to you.
At least to like the way we've been systematizing everything.
Does everyone lose all of that information in your brains for the last 2 minutes? Yes, series or seasons. We'll figure that piece out with a series or season name that comes out for this these 8 episodes as well. Anyway, this is a good indication that my brain is done. So honoring that.
Yes, let's honor that. I will see you tomorrow, Patrick, where we will record more and we will see listeners. Well, no, we won't see listeners.
On all major platforms and YouTube, you can like, download, subscribe, and share. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, free and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.